Okay, what is up? All my friends, all my real life friends out there, I love you all. We are so stoked to be back this week. We're back guns a-blazing. We got a banger of an episode. Brian's back, I'm back. We have an awesome guest who's going to share what it's like building trails for a living. I mean, it's just so much fun. We're going to get right into that. But first, I just want to share a little bit about our two sponsors this episode. So first sponsor on the list is one of my new favorites is Blender Eyewear. They have just so many different shades to choose from. Yeah, try saying that five times fast. They got some, like I said, just like tons of different options, and they're all so affordable. I don't think there's a single pair over $100. Almost all of them have polarized lenses. Then there's just like tons of different styles. So go check it out. I think you'll be impressed. And if you do find something you like, go ahead and use promo code LOCALROOTS16 at checkout. That really does help the show, and you get a discount and everybody kind of wins. So using these sponsor codes actually is important to us. We're not trying to like make money on the podcast or anything, but anything we do make, we put back into the podcast. So we're going to upgrade microphones or hopefully like upgrade our website to sell a couple like merch ideas that we have. Stuff like that. So it does help, and it helps us, you know, put out a better product for you guys. So literally just today I got my shades. They're the Volcano Jacks. They are tight. They look so cool. And then I got my wife a pair too that she loves. But I'd be lying if I told you I remember what they're called. Just kind of proves the point there, though, that there's something for everyone. So go ahead and check it out. Local Roots 16 for 16% off your purchase. And in sponsor number two, this is a really cool opportunity. All of you guys are most likely bikers if you're listening to this podcast, and you probably use nutrition. We have a sponsor today called Carbo Rocket. Maybe you're already a fan of them. Maybe you're looking to try some new options. Gotta recommend, give it a try. Brian loves it. I know he's using it right now. He loves the lemonade flavor. It's out of stock right now, but he said it'll be back soon. So just hold your horses and then maybe give that a try. Tyler, who's been on the podcast, is another huge fan and actually helped find the sponsorship for us. So thanks, Tyler. If you are interested, we actually get 25% off with these guys when you use our code. So really good deal. Go ahead and head over to Carbo Rocket and use promo code LOCALROOTSGOESFAST. That's not easy to say. So everything I just said, I know it's a ton of information. It'll be in the description. You'll find it there if you really want to check this stuff out. It's there. But let's get into the episode. That's why you're here. Bye. The day you went away, girl, and I probably won't come back around again.
Welcome to Local Roots Podcast.
Yes, that was a buttery intro. Brian, I think are you secretly doing like lessons like before, like when we're not recording, you're in the shower every morning like, welcome to Local Roots Podcast. Like,
I enrolled in a class, and that was going to be that was going to be my surprise to you one day, Larry, was to what be like, sweetie. Hey, I've been practicing. So you ruined it. But also like, surprise! I think
it's hard to not tell that like the lessons are rubbing off because you just sound so buttery smooth lately.
I do. I think I'm, you know, I kind of sound like a nice, you know, just open jar, Land of Lakes.
Oh, butter. Okay. I was like, what the hell? Where is he going with this?
Took me a while to think of what brand of butter I wanted to sound like. But
okay. You're like, man, am I a crock jock or am I a Land of Lakes?
What kind of butter do you eat?
You've never had crock jock?
It's not called crock jock. Is it really called crock jock?
No, it's definitely not. But I feel like I just couldn't remember exactly.
It should be.
Crock jock is what I scrape out of my bibs after like a long ride.
But oh my god, the visual of that! I feel sick.
That's where the real butter is.
Oh my god. All right, there goes everyone's like so excited. We finally have a fresh episode. Last week we had to re-earth an old video episode as an audio.
And they're here. And then the first thing we're talking about is some crock jock that's left in your bibs from a week ago.
Crock jock.
I love it. Crock jock. Hashtag funny.
Hashtag crock jock.
Hashtag crock jock. Before we just like totally lose our minds, let's go ahead and bring our guests in here. I'm so thrilled to have them. Brian, if you want to go ahead and introduce Josh real quick.
Yeah. We have the man, the myth, the legend, Josh McCready on the podcast. He is a master Jedi on the bike and also a wizard when it comes to building new trail.
I'm sorry. I got to put a foot down. Is he a Jedi or a wizard? We're talking Harry Potter or Star Wars. Well, you got to pick one.
I mean, it depends. I kind of think Obi-Wan walks that, walks that line of Jedi and wizard.
Obi-Wan, Don? Is that something?
Nope.
And all people's hyperbole meters are going off right now. But
Josh, what do you see yourself more as? Are you more of a wizard or a Jedi?
I would have to go in the Jedi camp, although I'm pretty
way cooler
wizard thing too.
All right.
Pretty geeky and proud. Yeah,
you're a wizard, Harry.
I love it.
So, I'm just wanting to say.
I do too.
It's never fun to say.
I think my favorite thing is that Harry Potter is now like one of those random shows that's on TV. Like I've never been like a total like all in for Harry Potter, but if it's on, I will watch every damn second of that.
Yeah, I think I watched the first three and I don't think I've seen the rest, but anyway.
All right, they hold up. They're fun.
No, I did see, I think with the last one where there's like a fetus Voldemort or something like that.
Oh, hell yeah.
That was kind of weird. Anyways, moving on. Josh McCready is master on the bike, also master on building trails, and he is also my fiance's cousin.
Woohoo!
You sound thrilled about it.
I love weddings, and it's going to be a great one someday.
Hell yeah, it is. Hopefully we can squeeze
pleasure to be here, guys. Yeah, I'm not quite up to the master level with riding or building at this point, but I'm very much a disciple of both those pursuits. So trying to get there. Trying to get there.
Yeah, we're going to have to kick him out now, aren't we?
Am I off?
Yeah, sorry. We're going to need a new guest now.
Great interview. Thanks for having me, guys.
It was a great evening.
So, all right. Yeah, the trail building thing. I've been in business for 3 years and been doing it full time for just over a year now. I resigned from my teaching position last June after building part time and on weekends for the 3 years before that. So.
So you went from being a full-time teacher to now being a full-time trail builder.
Correct. Yeah. I had 16 years in at Holly High School with a couple years in Arizona and a few years subbing and doing other educational work. So yeah, 20 years in education, burned out heavily, loved it.
Okay.
Loved the work, was, really committed, dedicated for a lot of years, but eventually, burned out and couldn't come back from it at some point.
Wow.
And always had the trail building and, mountain biking bug. Never really saw it as sort of my, my long-term post-teaching thing. I never thought I'd retire a teacher, but, and then the trail building popped up as a really good route.
How did that come to be? Like, where did you start trail building? And then when were you like, shit, I'm going to do this for a living.
Yeah. I came back, moved back to Michigan after a couple of years in Arizona and North Carolina, got this job in Holly and actually chose to live in Holly because it's just surrounded by really high quality trail systems. And so as sort of a therapeutic thing after school, I actually would just go out to the trails, take a shovel, take some tools, do some maintenance. And then I started kind of wanting to build more technical trail features. And so I really started doing it as a bandit without approval from the Holly mountain bike chapter.
Okay.
Going rogue.
So I got caught eventually after.
So on that time you were like on the dark side of the force.
Oh, totally. I was one of these goons like the kids that are out in my trails building, after hours going out there and building stuff. I was one of those guys and I was building some pretty cool rock features and it was getting good feedback, but they didn't like that I was doing it without approval.
Okay.
So I got caught and
oh no.
The caught was, hey, you got to stop what you're doing. but come do it with us because we kind of like your style.
Yeah, that's the best way to get in trouble.
You're too good at doing bad things.
Exactly. It was kind of a nice thing. So after getting in with this group of, you know, local guys who are just volunteers who poured incredible hours into maintaining like 25 miles of trails at Holdridge, I got involved with that group and was doing it legitimately and had pretty much free rein to go out there and build. But more importantly, I was putting in a lot of hours doing the maintenance and building the credibility with them to get there. So
that's cool. Did you have like a single like section or feature where all of a sudden, like, I'm sure it didn't happen like this, but was there just like an epiphany of like, what I just made kicks so much ass, this is like what I got to do? Or like you got like unlimited feedback that it just like boosted your like ego to the moon or anything? Like, was there a spark like that where just like you made something really great, or is it just like accumulation of a bunch of smaller things?
Oh yeah, there was one like that. Actually, it was Holdridge is littered with these gigantic rock piles because of farming history there. And there was this gigantic rock pile that kind of curved between these two beautiful oaks. So like okay. A curving uphill feature that no one could ride initially. It was a feature that everyone would stop in session and fall over into the rocks and then just get up and do it again and over again.
So with a couple of bloody knees, I'd imagine.
People got torn up. But when I watched people session that feature, that was really kind of a pivotal moment that people wanted that type of challenge. And I like building that kind of stuff. So
awesome.
From there, I actually then tried to learn more at that time, the MMBA. And I know you, you interviewed Nate Phelps, who was a MMBA hero of mine. He's been involved forever. Mm. You know, one of those big names. Anyway, I took some trail classes. There was this guy, Dan Harrison, who was a community college professor who had a curriculum and would travel around and teach trail building school. There was the like 101 was trail basics. What is a trail? What's the tread? What's the back slope? The language, the philosophy and science of trails.
Wow.
The next level was leading a trail crew, you know, how to keep people from killing each other with sharp tools, basically in the wood.
Implements of mass destruction.
You don't take that for granted. Not everyone swung those types of tools. And
yeah,
the third level was how to lay out design and then, you know, sort of the more planning and the vision for trails.
Yeah, that's awesome. So if we talk about that for a second, here's what I imagine it as. I want to kind of just like give that quick example, and then I want you to kind of maybe tell me what's right and what's wrong. But I'd imagine you'd have to get some contour maps from the city. And then how much like sections do you pick out at a time? Is it just like, well, I know we can do this within the next couple of days, so let's just plan this out? Or do you have like miles and miles planned out, and then it's just as you can get to it, you get to it?
So my current build, the city of Lapeer, the process was they had a mowed little trail in a small area that was being used by my brother and his students. The city kind of liked the idea of trails. They didn't know anything about trails. No one really in the community had any experience. So they brought me in. I went and read all their master planning documents. How do trails fit in with this community's plans for itself?
Yeah.
And every community has master planning documents that very much leave room for trails, recreational opportunities, access to nature, connectivity, accessibility. Hmm. All these things are in every master plan out there.
I love that.
So then it was figuring, okay, what's some good property that could be used that Lapeer has that could be turned into this? And they had property from an old state mental health facility. At that point, I spent about 2 weeks on the ground, literally crawling through every square inch of that property, figuring out what would hold trail and what wouldn't.
Oh, man.
Like you're,
so, I mean, yeah. It sounds so daunting, but also like so cool.
Oh, it's phenomenal. I mean, you get to learn a piece of property like no one has ever known it. And it's a real privilege. It's a really spectacular process of falling in love with a place.
For sure.
Okay. And then, everything that I fall in love with, how do I show it to people? How do I bring people into it? What are the best parts that I want to guide people through? And then what can I do with the tread to make it fun and playful and interesting and challenging? And And how do I make it good for a 6-year-old and a 70-year-old?
Is that so hard? Can you talk about that for a second? Because, I mean, if you see like this amazing feature, you're like, okay, this is going to be a jump followed by a rock garden and they catch air.
Then you got
a
backflip over two stumps and then like you're fine.
Yeah, like you can't just go all out. You got to like make sure it's friendly for everyone. Like what's your thought process when you're doing something like that?
Absolutely. Well, you know, a trail system sort of implies variety. And so in that system, I want something for the beginner who feels wobbly and feels like tipping over, who's never ridden a berm or a rock, rock garden or anything like that. So you need that sort of mellow experience, but that also has to be progressive so that they can actually develop their skills. It can't be so mellow and safe that there's no growth.
Yeah.
So really, I mean,
wow.
And then it's really, what is that terrain really best suited for a more advanced trail? Am I just going to be wasting that terrain on a really mellow trail, or can I make it sing if it's a beginner trail there? So, and then, you know, I know even in Lapeer, you know, you don't think that there's going to be a huge rider base. We lost Brian again, Larry.
You just keep going. We'll get him in a second.
Yeah, I'm back now.
So it turns out that you need that variety in every trail system. In every community right now, people are crying out for more advanced trails. In every community right now, people are crying.
That's very adamant in Grand Rapids, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's everywhere. Everywhere needs more advanced trails.
But I don't remember hearing about that, like, really even, like, last year. I don't remember hearing as many people saying, you know, we want more advanced features. We want our new bike park. We want this. Like, yeah. People always they liked the new features, but there wasn't a huge push for them. But I really feel that this year there's a huge push for more features.
Yeah, if I could jump in there, I think a little bit, at least from what I've seen of reasonings why, is like, I don't know, we've had a lot of like YouTube guys on our shows, like that's expanding so fast to me, and people are so like into like watching trail rides of other places. I think you almost have like this thing where you're everything you're watching when you're digesting mountain bike material nowadays, you're seeing the best of the best. And then when you have a great trail in your backyard, but it's not like, you know, as good as like a Sedona ride that you're watching on your computer, maybe that's like a little, I can't like say that's the main reason, but I bet that is like a little of like everyone being like, well, why don't we have this crazy ass, you know, technical stuff like they have there. I think there's like something in there. I don't know if that's the main reason, but I wanted to voice that.
Yeah, Larry, I think you're totally right. And cause like we're tight with some of the guys in the, you know, that run the Canonsburg Skills Park. Like, you know, we had Brian Zajac on here, who's a phenomenal biker. Mm-hmm. And those guys, they love those, you know, those big kickers, those drops, a lot of shit that I can't even think about hitting. Right. But there's nothing like that at any of the other trails in GR right now.
Right.
So I guess I kind of get that. I understand that frustration. That's like, Larry, that's like you and I snowboarding when we're like, ugh, this place sucks. They didn't have any cool jumps or rails.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's kind of similar to that.
Yeah. And you, no one's wrong in this situation either.
No, not at all.
Who doesn't want to get better at something like that? Like, that's a totally admirable thing. But at the same time, I think mountain biking is such a wide loved thing where, like, I mean, we all try to get like our wives out there. We try to get our brand new people to it out on the trail. I just took my sister mountain biking for the first time. And you got to be able to have both.
Absolutely. I think a big part of it too, I think you guys are nailing a lot of the, you know, the development of the sport through videos and the, just the progression of skills. But what are kids doing right now?
If the
local kids that have come from no skills, and 1 year later they are hitting everything and sending everything first or second effortlessly, no fear. I mean, we've got to build the trails for that future generation. So we just got to have everything to offer.
Yeah, Josh. Yeah, you're totally right. And even like, I think we can look at like bike progression, even like the modern like XC geometry, like those head angles are so much slacker than they used to be. Like even like the hardcore racers are still wanting to do, they want the air, they want to do tricks now, where before that wasn't a thing.
Right. Larry, you said something that's interesting to me, that nobody's wrong. And I agree with you.
Yeah.
The answer is more trails and more variety.
I'm okay with that answer.
More trail.
More trails, more variety. That's the answer.
But I love that.
I do think there is a wrong in this, though, and that's the phrase dumbing down. Okay. You guys have heard that, right?
Yes.
And this is something I think about a lot, actually, because I hear this on every conditions page that I ever see. There's a rock is removed. Oh, everyone's dumbing down the trails. A root breaks off. Everyone's dumbing down the trails. I just don't think it's really nuanced or accurate and a really quality way of describing what's happening with trails.
Sure. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because I mean, I kind of get it, and it's like always just like, it's so reductive. It sounds like, but like, can you explain like maybe some of like the good things or like positive reasons around it?
Well, yeah. So here's for one example, there's this great trail by me called the Highland Rec Area.
Highland Rec. That's Tyler Teichman's favorite trail.
And when it was first built, according to the trail builders, it was brown sidewalk, buttery smooth, you know, just really gentle tread. And right now it is rocky, it's rooty, it's slow, it's technical, it's rugged. And people are crazy about it. They love it. It's a cult favorite. But that trail has not become easier. It's become much harder over the years. It's become harder because of erosion. Where, you know, it's become very rutted out. The rocks are exposed and looser. If anything, that trail's become much tougher. And that's the case with a lot of the hand-built trails around here. As erosion happens, rocks are exposed. Roots are exposed. Roots break off. As soon as a root is exposed, it's dying. And it's going to break off. And, you know, if anything, people should be making trails armored to protect them so they don't continue to erode, and then people roll the rocks out of the way. People will sometimes break roots accidentally or intentionally, and that's what people think is being dumbed down. Another aspect of this, people ride the same trail like every other day. Mm-hmm. And when you know a trail that well, and you're used to seeing every rock and every root, and you think the trail is static. It's going to be the same every time I ride it. Any little change to it, people get really sensitive about, react emotionally, and call it dumbing down, even if it's really just sort of a natural change to the trail.
Wow. Well put. And I think
that's super well put.
And I kind of, you got to empathize a little bit. Like, I get that it's your hometown trail. Like, some people aren't into the adventurous part of it. They want to get the best time on their singular trail that they can. And you'll never break away from those type of guys. And that's fine. That's the way that they want to do their sport. But I think I'm biased because I'm always looking for something new, and I'm always looking for things to evolve. And I think, unfortunately, those are just always going to be polar opposites, aren't they?
It's mindset. It's a mindset about trails that, you know, I think you're more flexible and adaptive and expect that type of change, which is what happens to trails. They evolve one way or another.
Didn't mean to cut you off there. But what kind of solutions or ways to reinforce the trail, maybe help with the longevity of stuff like this where things do become more exposed? Like, I'm thinking of Merrill right now, and I swear just from the beginning of this year to like the last time I rode it, it has gotten so much more roots, so much more rocks. It's kind of fun in a lot of ways, but at the same time, you can feel it just like it's almost like in a painful way that the trail's not looking healthy in some points.
It's a great point. And that's a phenomenal trail built by one of the best in the business. I'm a huge fanboy of Spectrum. So that trail has been loved. And right now, another thing that has to be mentioned is that we are in a explosion of users on our trails. Bikers, hikers.
Oh, yeah.
The use right now is astronomical. We don't have good data to really document that I've seen at least. But anecdotally, do you guys agree that trails are overrun right now?
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
especially, it's unreal. The only place that people can go, like, especially mid-pandemic, like when it was like peak pandemic, like I mean, I don't blame anyone for this one bit, but everyone was out there.
Everybody. It was nuts.
So trails are getting beat. And those inexperienced trail users use them when they're fragile. They use them when they're in the freeze thaw cycle. They use them when they're wet. They're not aware of damage that happens to trails. And so they're getting beat right now. But I mean, if you even look at what happens in Copper Harbor, every couple of years, rock solid's coming back through and they're refreshing the entire trail system. Marquette, you know, they're refreshing trails that get beat like that. It's maintenance. And so in a situation like that trail, it needs machines. I know there's a hardcore volunteer group, Rick Plight and the crew that takes care of that trail. They are awesome, but it needs machines and it needs a little bit, probably a pretty serious refresh, just like any trail does. So that would be my recommendation for that. And I'm sure if Spectrum came back and looked at it, they'd see the same types of things. Let's build that berm again. Let's armor some things. Let's
I think that'd be interesting. Yeah. And there's definitely some parts of Merrill that I think are getting a little, like Larry said, a little blown out. There are a lot of really, I don't know, last time you rode Merrill, Larry, but there's a lot of new features in the past like month, which are pretty sweet.
I think that's due to, and I think what I was more saying is it's a combination of what Josh just said of like so many new people are hitting the trail now, and people like Nate was saying they couldn't do trail days. They couldn't maintain this. Like those two are like the death of a trail right there. You just said
no maintenance
and twice as much traffic. Like that's tough.
Yeah, you're so right. And then I was out at Luton, I don't know, one of the days this week anyways. And I kind of noticed, I was like, damn, this is like really rutted out. And like Luton's a relatively easy trail. And there were some pretty hardcore ruts through there. And I was kind of like, oh, what the heck happened here? But as I'm talking about Luton, this just sparks something. Josh, what is, you know, as a trail builder, as an experienced rider, what are your thoughts on people building ride arounds for certain features of the trail? So say just for the sake of the argument that the ride around that was created doesn't cause any more erosion. It doesn't cause any problems. It is just a ride around for a particular difficult section. Whether it was a tight hairpin turn into some rocks, whether there was a stump, you know, however it may be, do you have any strong opinions on the matter?
It's tricky.
we
call that trail braiding sometimes, where users are just, and this happens when trails are muddy. Mm-hmm. This happens when trails are hard and people aren't ready for that type of trail. So I have a couple of thoughts. Number one, most modern trails are they have alternate lines. You'll have a tech line and you'll have an alternate line. So that's one thing that just controls for that. Mm-hmm. The other thing is aggressive blocking off a lot of times. Sometimes you just have to put logs and rocks and things to eliminate those options, those go arounds. And a lot of the stuff that I build and a lot of what pros build, there are optional lines and go arounds built in to avoid exactly that.
Yeah.
Line. Yeah.
Do you empathize with the, cause I see, honestly, it's almost annoying. Like I get where they're coming from, but, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are this guy and I'm not attacking them by any means, but like you see like on the conditions page of people just like exclaiming it's the end of the world because somebody's
going around this tree,
right, or whatever. And you know, it's funny because in a week later that is now like the new route that they have made and like dubbed it. So it's like, I don't know, like I get where they're coming from. It's like not how the trail was originally meant to be rode, but I see it from both ways. It's like, I don't want to call anyone out here, it's just like, I don't know. Everyone's just so adamant that there's only one right way. And I think that's above all what pisses me off.
Yeah, Leary drives me nuts because people they get so fucking mad about it, and I'm just like, get the fuck over it. Like, the guys that are using
what I was kind of thinking, but I was trying to be nice for.
So there's these guys that are all butthurt because they, you know, someone might beat their KOM because this other guy might use this go around where the other guy didn't, and it's like these go arounds they're not made for the KOM fucking turbo men. They're meant for, like, you know, Joe Schmo, who's 80 with a bum knee, so he can like enjoy the trails and doesn't have to go over this log. Like, let that be, and just like kind of get the fuck over it. Is that's my opinion. If it's not causing any harm to the trail, like, just let it be. That's my thought. Also, because these are happening on trails such as like Luton. Luton is not a world class hardcore trail. Like, if someone wants to make it a little bit easier, just fucking let them.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a tricky situation. If you're the trail coordinator, you're going to have feelings about it one way. I don't know. I think it comes down to more trails, more variety. It comes down to the original construction. You really kind of have to look at that at a case by case basis. But
yeah, I could totally see that too.
Mostly take the emotion out of it and just look at it kind of cold, practically. What's the right thing for this section of trail?
Yeah, I'd say if you look deep down and you're like at that point when you're riding and you see it, you usually your gut instinct can tell you if this was a smart move that someone made or not, and you usually can take that right direction. And if only it was that simple for everyone else.
Yeah, I agree. And Lear, you nailed it, because yeah, one of my favorite things is when someone points out, oh, some asshole made a new ride around, and then it's like the next time I go to that trail, like the original way is now like permanently blocked off. Exactly. So like you have to go the new way.
So was it a better line from the start? Yeah, it's tricky. It's not no easy answer in that.
Right.
Yeah.
So not to totally derail us, but I did want to kind of. No, you're fine. I think I want to keep this conversation going, but I want to kind of shift it a little bit because yesterday, actually, I finally made it up to, Nuevo? Is that right?
Yeah.
Hard yeah. Dam.
Sure. Yeah.
It's also Nuevo.
Nuevo. Yeah. So I got a taste of the dragon, which is just so exciting. Like, that is going to be 40 some miles of trail. That is going to be crazy cool. This thing was a blast. It took me about an hour, I'd say, just to find the right spot to actually start my ride. I went to the state forest, like main entrance, and I guess there is a section there, but I then read it was only like about a mile long, or only a mile was finished at that point. And then I saw there was maybe 4 or 5 miles by the Sandy Beach Park, it's called.
Yeah.
So I ended up. Yeah, cool. So yeah, that's where I ended up riding, and it was well worth being lost for an hour, honestly. Like I parked a little bit away from there and rode my bike like on the road past the water through the dam. So I got like a nice view for like my warm up and did like a total about like 12 miles, nothing crazy, but it was a great time. All that to say, I'd love to hear, Josh, I know you've checked it out, and being a trail master, I'd love to hear your thoughts on like this new construction. And it's really well done, in my opinion. Very flowy, no like challenging climbs, but like enough climbs to get a workout. The downhills are long, the uphills are long, but like not like very steep, you know. I don't know, what are your thoughts?
I'm in love. It's brilliant. It's going to be an epic monster trail. It's everything that they've talked about in the development of this epic destination trail and an absolutely beautiful setting, top-notch trail craft. It's fantastic. I parked at that Sandy Beach County Park as well.
Yep.
Did the ride to the north, and then I did the little chunk down to Hardy Dam too. And I did it all twice. I couldn't stop with once because it just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be a primo experience. Once again, the Mountain Bike Alliance, the Western crew has just killed it. And I you guys are spoiled. I cannot believe it.
We are.
You just make me sick over there. And we need to do better on the east side to compete.
Yeah, I gotta say, being in Rockford now, I am 5 minutes from Luton, 5 minutes from Merrill, and it only took me, if I went to the right place at the first part, it's only about like a 30 to 40 minute drive to get to the Dragon. So that's gonna be pretty awesome.
Dreamy.
Good for you. Right. Yeah, so I wanted to talk about it, like, A, because it's exactly what you were saying, like any one who's just starting could have a blast there. There's some really fun stuff, but there's a couple cool technical features too. And what I was saying, and I wanted to talk to you about mostly, is what I was saying about the climbs. Like, there's like, I got a good 1,000 feet of just doing that, which is, it's no slouch, I'd say, but it didn't feel like it. It was something about it, the way that it, I think it's like the gentle slope that I think maybe hills need more of, or can you explain to me the logic there, or what did I feel? What was that feeling that why did I not feel dead?
Yeah, kind of the rollers and grade reversals.
Teach me that.
So you're climbing a chunk, and then you get a little downhill to sort of get a little roll and pump for some momentum, and then you just carry that momentum, and you can stay in a higher gear and spin, just really spin it out, or power it, because none of those are really that long.
Mm-hmm.
And that's classic trail building. In the old days, they would have just done a huge, you know, nonstop, you know, right straight downhill fall line trail, or at best on the edge of the slope on the contour a little bit more, but too steep, and it would have rutted out and blown out. That's just modern perfection in trail technique right there.
Wow, yeah.
Well, it sounds that when they're getting it right. So, yeah, you can probably tell I'm a little bit of a spectrum fan. My history, you know, sort of studying trails and trail design goes back to Brown County, where the Spectrum, you know, sort of Alex Stewart sort of got his start.
Yeah. I want you to finish this story, but before you get into it, can you explain to me what Spectrum is? Because I actually don't know.
So, the company that built Merrill and the DTE trail system.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Maple Hill down in Kalamazoo, which is another really, really excellent small trail system. This is Alex Stewart and Spectrum Trail Designs. I guess they're based out of Indiana. They've been in the game for a long time. And they started building this Brown County State Park and some other Indiana trails, and then basically exported that skill set all around the Midwest. And so they're some of the best going. So in terms of my trail building heroes, and, you know, I'm fairly new to the game, so I look up to guys like Alex Stewart and Spectrum, the rock solid Aaron Rodgers crew. And, you know, these are people that
have discount double check Aaron Rodgers
invented these standards in some ways, invented this style of trail building and perfected it.
Wow. Now, one that I know of, and I'm curious, have you ever heard of Palmer Woods up in Traverse City? Who are those guys? I think it's called like Flow Track.
Yeah,
it is.
His name is Matt.
Okay.
Last name, I think it's Bielich. I'm not sure if I pronounce it right. But again, a super talented Michigan based trail builder, did the building up in Marquette and Munich.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a fun place.
Palmer Woods is a great place to go if you want to learn how to hit drops. It's
basically
drop school. Lots of big limestone, flat limestone blocks set up in ways that just kind of launch you smoothly. Everything from, you know, 12 inches to 4 feet of drop.
In
a really beautiful forest. Super sandy soils, but just a really cool trail system. And it's, they call it a dedicated flow trail.
Yeah.
So we come back to that trail variety topic. Traverse City is a great area for riding really nice hand-built sandy trails, the bottom trails, you know, all the Iceman stuff. It's a great area to ride. But Flow Track built that trail system at Palmer Woods, which is completely different than anything in the area.
And I think that's a good way of like what you were saying of like where the advanced rider is going to go at Vasa, because let me tell you, I've rode almost all of Vasa and it's huge. So I can't say all of it, but there's nothing crazy challenging there.
Nothing too crazy.
They've also, you know, sort of to to offer some more variety, they built out this thing called the Acme Skills Park at the sort of the Vasta Trailhead.
Oh, really? How new is that? I don't remember seeing that.
It's within the last couple of years. I went and studied it after Iceman
left. Oh, you know what? I'm so sorry. Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
But it's kind of cool. There's, you know, it's they're building some more flow style and just some different, more jumps and tabletops and berms.
Kind of small, right?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like a skills park feel, but it's a cool addition to the trail portfolio. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bummerwood.
I could just like, I could point to every trail and I want to be like, who made that one?
Who made that one? Yeah. Josh, what is your company's name?
Yeah.
The company is called Trail Sense. Trail Sense, S-E-N-S-E. And had it going since 2017. It's pretty much me and whatever guys I hired to do hand finishing work. I build with a Kubota U17 mini excavator, which is
okay.
It's a mini excavator. It can build in 39 inches to 46 inches wide. Just really is great for sculpting, but it also can clear the corridor and tear out, you know, the small brush and all the junk and get that out of the way to get down to the soil. I have a little Canicom power wheelbarrow, and other than that, it's basically hand tools, you know, a mechanical compactor for the final finish compaction, but
very cool.
Yeah, so that's about
your business. Do you mind me asking, do you have like one of my favorite thing is we were talking about that Palmer Woods, for instance. The only reason I know about them, they have a really great like Instagram.
Yeah, they do.
I'm watching like their builds and like the guys trying it out. Do you have anything like that? I'd love to share that
with you. I like their dog.
Yeah.
No. Man has a really
good get you on one, man.
I have an Instagram page. It's pretty.
You got the IG, Josh. Yeah.
I do. Okay. What's my Instagram here? I got to pull it up. It's
Trail Sense. Trail Sensei, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Trail Sense MI, I think. It's, I tried.
Oh, I kept calling you Trail Sensei.
That's cool, too.
Well, I'm changing my business name right there. I should have asked you.
Trail Sensei. Yeah.
Now you got to have a sword in your hand. Well, yeah. A lightsaber.
Let's see here. Trail Sense. Oh, gosh. I'm not.
Don't worry about it. We'll make sure we link it in the episode description so people can check out.
Yeah, we'll get it in there.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm getting started here. I've got this season pretty much booked out. I'm on
that's great, course. Man.
I've got some other ones lined up. And
now, can you give us
the winner? Oh, sorry, Brian.
Wait, what was the question?
Mine's short. I'll go first. I was just curious. What do you do in the winter? Can you still get some building done, or does the ground freeze up and make that pretty hard?
I've built all the way through January. When I was teaching, I built a trail at my school because I had an outdoor club and I had a bunch of bikes at the school. Needed a trail to build. So we built into January and the soil was not frozen that year. But it's really all about when the soil freezes solid. The winter, though, is when I turn to design, planning, trying to develop from the advocacy angle, trying to actually develop projects. And that's where I'm kind of weird, I guess. If you're one of these premium companies that have the deep portfolio, people are coming to you. I'm not there. So, and I guess my philosophy is a little different. I want to build close to home. I want to build in areas that need trails. I'm close to Genesee County. I want to build in counties that don't have trails. I want to build areas that need trails for communities that don't have access to nature. So I'm kind of trying to fill a different niche with this business, actually. I don't want to go live in the woods, you know, I'm all for living in the woods, but I don't want to go live 8 hours from home and live like a bandit in the woods. You know, I want to see,
you don't want to be Bear Grylls,
but I want to transform my region into more of a trail. I just want to have more trails close to home. That's the
first. That rules.
Yeah.
I can see you. You're going to buy, like, do one of those van builds where, like, you build out a van and just travel around Michigan building trails in a van.
Josh, you're close to that, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm not far. I'm putting up the dirt bag in the old school sense.
I like it.
So, yeah, my dream jobs are, I want to build a jet. I want to build trails in counties that have no trail systems. I want to build trails in the counties that have the highest poverty rates in Michigan. Mm. I want to connect to communities like that in need. So
no kidding. That's awesome.
If that means I make less money and have to subsidize these trail systems, if that means I work with local youth crews to build trails and I train them how to build with me, that's the type of stuff I want to do. And
I love the pure intent.
That's badass, Josh.
That's lovely.
Thank you. But it is, you know, there are these, we see plenty of people who look like us, and I don't know what you guys look like, but I'm Brian, I know what you look like.
I'm actually, you know, really, I'm really skinny, really handsome.
But
definitely not a chubby little mountain bike boy.
But this is a deadly serious topic to me. I mean, we look at health outcomes, we look at access to nature, we look at so many of these socio-cultural factors, and trails are transformative in so many ways. We're more desperate for this type of experience than we ever have been right now. COVID has exposed that.
Yeah.
The need was there for this too.
Do you see it growing as, like, obviously I think mountain bike as a hobby is obviously on an upward trend for the most part. You can't even buy a bike right now for, I mean, other external factors, but obviously it's still pretty popular. Do you see the need for trails? Obviously, I know that's your passion. You want them everywhere. As far as like the hiring and the city allocation of budget, do you see it as something consistently growing as far as like the city's allocation, or is it something that maybe needs to be advocated more?
Aha. That's precisely the sticking point. The Lapeer Gap. This is so visionary on their part to really go for this, to recognize the need and to really invest. This is a tax funded trail building project in Lapeer, Michigan.
Love it.
This is economic development fund.
That's badass.
Because, you know, when all those city managers are going to their conferences and they're talking with master planners and they're talking about their visions for the community and what they want to offer, what's going to attract young families, what's good for the health of their community, what's good investment. Trails make perfect sense, but very few communities are actually connecting money to trails. They'll think nothing of throwing money at ball fields, at
fields. It's traditional, it's proven.
Yeah. But trails need a place at the table, and they're getting there, but it's really hard to get there consistently. There are
community maybe tips that we can share with our listeners right now of like, how can they advocate a little stronger? Like how could we help get the word out even?
Yeah.
Who's it that needs to be persuaded right now? Is it like city council members?
Well, see, most
we can get on. We'll chase them down. We'll go on their
front pick it.
So coming back to the master planning thing, every community has to have these master plans. They're all paying consultants to do it. They, you know, they outsource that to some consultant. And this is kind of, you know, trails are kind of typical in that world. But it's usually paved trails or it's limestone paths. The natural surface trail is totally underrepresented. But once that idea is in front of people, it clicks.
Sure. Okay. So that makes a lot of sense. Like, it's very easy, just to help me wrap my head around it. You could tell me if I'm wrong or not, but like, it's so easy probably for a city, like let's say even Traverse City or hell, even Rockford where I am, to do something like the Tart Trail or the White Pine. It makes sense. It's paved. It's something everyone can use. It's very accessible.
Everybody.
How do you say that a mountain bike trail, you know, it's technically for hiking and stuff, but
yes,
you know, you're making it rideable. So how do you do that? Like, do you have like a pitch deck? What do you do?
Well, you're absolutely right. The phrase is multi-use. And most trail systems, even mountain
like
trail systems, will get just as much foot traffic. Glacial Hills. Glacial Hills. And here's another facet to this.
Wait, who built that?
Glacial Hills was built by, I think they brought in some people, but it was Brad Gerlach and a crew of locals, basically, that worked with the Grand Traverse Land Conservancy.
Okay. I do love that trail. It's
me
so
too.
Fun.
I absolutely love it.
Glacial, yeah.
Love all the miles. Love the forest. But that...
Josh, I had my worst wipeout of my life there with you.
Oh, gosh.
That was a rough... You were with Josh then. Okay.
That was the camp trip. Anyways, well, moving on.
I totally derailed you. I'm so sorry, Josh. Go ahead.
Oh, I don't remember where I was. Probably talking nonsense about
trails. You know, you were talking about Glacial Hills is where we started. Yeah. Okay. Oh, and how walkers there just as all much right. as bikers.
So let's come. They commissioned an economic impact study. In a year there, they calculate $1.5 million of economic impact from trails.
Wow. Wow.
That trail is year round. They have it groomed. They have a different groomer every day all winter. They document more foot traffic than bike traffic, by the way, and it's a multi-use trail system. So
yeah,
to
prove that point a little bit, I can speak of countless times when I was living in Traverse City. I think one day, for example, I met up with Evan. We rode about 10 to 15 miles, then rode our bikes to Shorts and back, and just, mm-hmm. you know, we supported the city there while we were there. Yeah, that makes total sense.
So the economic impact is a huge piece of this argument. Back to the Lapeer again. Last night was the Tilted Axis group ride. It's a brewery in town. They sponsor okay. group ride. They give 30% off to anybody that comes to drink beer and eat pizza afterwards.
Shit.
Our biggest night last night so far, there were 34 riders at the group ride last night, and nice. There were more people out on the trails beyond that. Those people are buying gas. They're, you know, the economic argument is huge for politicians and people in with power. So
oh, yeah,
I recommend that, but quality of life. I mean, if you want young families to come to your community, mountain biking, hiking, and trail running are massive growth sports. That's well documented. You can look at outdoor recreation statistics. There are pretty effective lobbying groups that are documenting the growth of these sports and the economic.
I believe it.
So we need to capitalize on that. And it's we're slowly getting there, but having effective advocates on the ground that can speak this language and really move politicians, it's, you don't have too many Nate Phelps around.
sure.
You don't just grow Nate Phelps in a Petri dish. Those are hard. So that's the challenge.
Yeah, wow. It makes sense. And I mean, maybe it's so much easier for us to understand it because we're firsthand. We're the audience that travels to go ride. We are those people. You don't have to sell us.
Right.
But, it's hard to open some minds. But at the same time, it sounds like overall we are headed in the right direction. I mean, with all these new constructions like the Dragon before we leave here, I definitely want to hear the one in Grand Rapids that Josh, you're about to start working on. Obviously it is part of people's, you know, mindset, at least for the most part. It could maybe these smaller cities, maybe these places that aren't in Grand Rapids or Traverse City or well-known cities, you know, like your Lapeers or maybe even something like an Owosso, Michigan, where Brian and I are from. Like,
yeah.
It's hard for those people to maybe see it, but there are some, and I think hopefully it's heading in that right direction. Do you want to talk about what you're working on here,
Susan? I was gonna say, yeah Josh, are you allowed to
I can give you,
preview us
I can give you what treat. I know and the status that I know. First of all, I'm making a note because I'm gonna call Owosso on Monday. I'm gonna talk to their city manager and get some trails built there.
Just yeah, my man.
Oh shit.
That's the kind
I
of
like stuff. That.
There's gotta be that. A chunk of property there where we can build 5 miles of trail in that town.
Let's if there's a mountain bike trail, then there's going to be a brewery, and then Owosso might turn cool.
So people
very
will
exciting.
Be mad at
very
me
exciting.
People will be mad at me if they do know Owosso because there is technically a trail there. It's at what is that called? Brian Hopkins Lake.
Owosso is a mountain bike trail.
Yeah. But it's like only a mile, and you could expand on that and make something nice for sure.
All right, let's do it.
Okay.
So look, Grand Rapids, the project that I've been involved with there is the Ball Perkins Park Trail Development. I've sort of assessed the site. I've done some preliminary design work. I've worked with a trail coordinator there that's already in place, who's super involved, really, really excited about it. It's a really great possibility. And with funding and with the city, you know, approval, once that process is all set, probably about 3 miles of pretty aggressive trail. There's a huge amount of elevation, in a really pretty compact area.
Extremely deep, all right, I'm out.
Extremely deep ravines with very steep sidewalls, side slopes. So it will hold some pretty advanced trail. And that's kind of the concept that the Western Alliance people have told me is in demand. They want more aggressive trail. In addition to some, you know, there's going to be variety there, but definitely want some more aggressive trail, and the terrain will definitely hold it.
Wow. So do you see this project as being like something like super fun for you to be able to work on? Are you like, hell yeah, this is going to be sick? Or are you kind of like, shit, this might be like pretty hard to do? Like, do you view it more as fun or tricky?
Oh, no. When I talked about falling in love with property, and then I'm very much in love with that property. It is painfully
beautiful. You and Nate both are.
It's painfully beautiful. And there are some vistas that look out north over the city. And
oh, God, that's going to be sick.
It's pretty. Now, the canopy, right now I'm building in a really mature canopy, this beautiful oak and maple forest. The canopy at Ball Perkins is a little bit depleted because of ash and elm death.
Okay.
But still, the terrain there is really phenomenal. And what I think what's so cool about it is it's really going to – the concept can involve some more walking trails. There's a huge community garden there.
Okay.
And there are a couple of spots where people could walk out like on a limestone path to some really impressive vistas and some social areas and such. And the mountain bike trails, the multi-use trails would sort of wind around all that. Now, okay. We don't have final designs. We don't know a lot of the, you know, whether it's directional or one way or those types of questions yet. But in the next month, I'm going to be over there getting sort of design, sort of the design in place so that the city then can move forward with their permitting process. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, it's exciting. When you come out, make sure you let us know. Maybe we can go ride and grab some beer after.
Maybe even if it's a weekend and we're free, we'd love to be an extra hand out there, Ethan.
I'd love
it. Yeah, no kidding. I'd love to go check it out.
And guys, I need a tour of Luton because I have never ridden there, actually.
Well, that we can handle.
Okay. Yeah, we can definitely do.
Do it.
And then we'll hit up Third Nature after.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, I'm still
game on. Yeah. Real quick, Josh, I don't know. Do you wanna dive in a little bit about your new whip?
The bike, yeah.
Who doesn't want to talk about a new bike, right?
Are you still loving the shit out of it?
Oh my gosh, that thing, I'm loving it more, and I'm actually starting to learn how to ride it decently.
Okay.
I've been on a rigid 29er, a custom built steel 29er that I've been riding and racing for the last 10 years.
Things freaking tits. It is
dedication. Damn. No, it's
badass.
Hand built in Marquette, Michigan, a Sisu, built by this guy up there. But I also have the Trek Farley that's all rigid. So all of a sudden I'm on this 120 bike. It's front and back 120, the Kona AA. I have the CR version. People look at it and they love the look of it. But then they start.
It looks dope.
Then you start looking at the setup, and the setup is it's so comfortable. I mean, everything I'm saying is going to be totally cliche. It's the most fun I've ever had on a bike. But all these things are totally true. I am so in love with that bike. It's boosty. Like once I get the settings dialed in, I cannot stay on the ground because it's just flicking me into the air with every little contour in the trail. It's weird. Super efficient.
Fun as hell.
What is this called again? I want to pull up a picture so I can.
It's the Kona Hey Hey 29.
Oh, Hey Hey. Okay, gotcha. I thought you said AA, and then it, which is actually an old Kona bike. It looks like it's like an old kind of like stump jumper style from back in the day, which is cool.
The Uper version. Yeah. Hey Hey 29. I have the CR, which is the green and silver, which is sparkly and gorgeous. I don't know how to ride a drop.
Fancy for carbon.
Yeah, full carbon. I have no idea how to use the dropper post yet. The bike is way over my head, but I'm definitely going to look forward to growing into it. They got it from Central District. Nate set it up perfectly. It's just, it's exactly the bike I was looking for that I didn't know I was looking for. And furthermore, it's the bike for the trails that I want to build. It's
there you go.
Yeah. It's my work testing bike. So it's just fun to flick around and really push my own skills on, actually.
Yeah, that looks like a solid ride. That looks fun. It's got kind of like the, I like the shift to like more the rear suspension kind of on the top tube there. This is below it, but still kind of like the same mentality there. I feel like that's like, a little more like if you're going from a hardtail to a full suspension, that's probably going to be, this is all assumption, so don't take my word for anything other than a dummy, but it seems like it'd be a good transition from going to from a hardtail.
It is. It's hard to say. I just want to take
it. The man loves his bike. There's nothing wrong with that.
I just want to travel with it. I just want to put it on my truck and just drive and ride it all over the place. It's just a bike that I never get tired of.
Josh, I love hearing just like the absolute passion you have for mountain bike and for trail building. That's really especially reassuring from someone who you're almost trusting your life with when you're going 15 miles an hour down a rock garden, you know?
Appreciate it. Oh, shoot.
Yeah, no kidding.
How are you doing on time here, Josh? Do we need to wrap up or?
Fairly soon. You guys can kick me off and do your thing here. Yeah.
This is our thing. This is it.
You're looking at it. It doesn't give much better than this.
Josh, you are our star. People don't come to listen to Larry or I. They come to listen to you.
Our fun, interesting guests, and man, you're killing it. This has been so cool to talk to you, and I feel like I've learned so much. I could, like I said, just probably sit down and be like, well, who built this? Well, why, how come this part's like this? Like, is this part gonna go bad soon? Like I could just go for days learning about that. It's so interesting.
Yeah, I've been pretty kidding. And Josh, I'm sure you probably get pretty irritated with me, but like whenever we're together, I just always want to pick your brain for like, you know, let's talk bikes, let's talk trail, let's talk, you know, how do I pedal faster, how do I do this. You were just like this wealth of knowledge, and after this podcast I am now thoroughly convinced that this wealth of knowledge is never ending.
But here's the thing, you guys are ambassadors for the sport. You're putting in the time here to share all this too. You're bringing on Matt Acker, you're bringing on these really amazing people from the state who have done things. I don't feel like I'm even in their company, but it's really cool to be part of it.
You are.
And then the other thing is, you know, everything that you give to this community always just gets passed on. We didn't grow up doing these things. I didn't. I never touched a mountain bike until I was 19. So we didn't grow up doing these things. And we're all kind of new to it at one point. We're all enthusiastic and learning. And we just need to keep our ego about it and keep our ego out of it. And just focus on sharing it, building community, and, you know, providing these experiences for more people. That's my mission in life. So,
well, I'll be damned if that isn't the most inquisitive and well put statement we've had on the damn podcast.
Yeah, Josh, I love that. Keep your ego out of mountain biking and just spread it to everybody. Yeah, I love it.
That's so well put that I don't think I have anything else to add to this episode.
You guys. Brian, it's always, I never get tired of talking with bikes. I sit on an excavator all day. I listen to music all day. I sometimes go for 2 or 3 days at a time without saying anything. So when I get a chance to talk to people, it's pretty fun.
All right. Well, I'll take it. Anytime you want to stop by, at the very least, we'll see you at Brian's wedding, it sounds like.
Yeah. It's going to be a hell of a party. But yeah, Josh, hopefully we'll see you soon and we can go ride and grab some beer and hang out, and that'd be, and then Larry and I will pester you about more questions.
Like a date.
Man, sounds phenomenal, guys. Keep doing the good work, and talk to you guys soon.
All right, Josh.
All right. Thank you, Josh. We'll see you later.
Yeah, have a good night, guys. Take care.
All right. Bye.
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 Man, that was really good. Great guess, Brian. Good job.
Yeah. Josh is pretty intense. He's just very like part well of
spoken and passionate. Like, that's all it takes to, you know, do a good episode, someone with passion.
No, absolutely. Like, the first time I met Josh, it was like, yeah, maybe you were doing some questionable activities and drinking too many beers. And that's, and we start talking about beer, and I go biking with him, and I'm like, well, shit, this guy's like, I'm kind of in the presence of like mountain bike greatness and a bunch of like history and trail building, and it's pretty sweet.
I love that he not only just like knows so much, but he like all of the trail builders himself are like heroes to him, and that he's like amongst them. That's cool.
Oh, he's awesome. Yeah. Josh. Yeah. And anytime you go ride with him, someone's like dicking around, taking too long, he's like, hey, all right, come on. Who's got a beer? Who's got, you know, let's go. Let's do something. Let's fucking party. It's like, all right. But he's also just super level headed. Yeah. He's an awesome dude.
That's great.
I know, Larry, we wanted to touch base on the Dragon Trail.
We did that. I'm happy. I got what I got to say.
Before, did you want to talk up here about? I know you want to talk about your dumpster experience.
I'll save that for later. That's just a teaser. We'll call that Larry's dumpster. Maybe we'll get to that next week.
I love it.
I'm more interested if you could just end this with your beautiful sentiment about what it's like to get tested for Corona.
Jesus.
We were Jesus out fuck. Last week. I kept it very mild on the episode. I mentioned that Brian was under the weather, I think, as much as I left it. But yeah, we were worried for you. How'd that go, bud?
Thank you. Let me take a sip of my beer. I also want to talk about this beer really quick.
Okay.
All right. First of all, I was sick. What, last week? I was sick from like Sunday to Saturday morning. And usually when you're sick, it's like, yeah, you start getting sick, then it gets really shitty, and then you're just like kind of slowly getting better. This was just like the fucking bottom of it for like 6.5 days straight. Like, it was just instantaneously awful, and then instantaneously I was fine. So I guess like that was cool, but it was 6 days of like hell. And started off with, I had some really shitty stomach problems, and we'll leave it at that for,
All right. We'll be very polite and mature about it. But my man had some butt rockets.
I had some just straight up fucking just ass missiles for like 6 days straight. I was at the point where I was rubbing like Vaseline on my freaking butt cheeks, 'cause it was so often. And anyways, at one point I spiked a fever.
If I never have to envision that again, that'd just be lovely. And now our hundreds of listeners get to now get that embaked in their head.
Just literal, just ass soup. And anyway, so, and it was fine. I got a stomach ache, whatever. And it's bad, fuck ever. But then I spiked a fever, and I'm just like, oh, fuck. And it wasn't getting better. I took like a bunch of pills that are supposed to make you not have butt missiles, and they didn't work. And then I got really scared, and then shit started like changing color. And I was like, oh fuck, I'm dying. And at one point I told Alexa, I was like, honey, I love you forever. Like, I think like tonight I might be gone. I don't know. Something bad might happen. I might just like, my whole body might just like disintegrate into the toilet the next time I go. Like, I don't know what's going to happen to me. There's nothing else inside me. But then I got a fever, and I called the urgent care, and they're like, well, you know, we're going to make you go get a COVID test. And I'm like, okay, fucking cool. So, and then Alexa had to get a COVID test as well, because she lives with me. Now, she had zero symptoms, anything going on. I'm convinced this is something like I ate something bad that had like a virus in it. I don't know.
Well, you were eating moose hooves, right?
It was skunk tail that I think may have done it, but, I digress. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that stuff goes right through me. So
yeah, usually it's Jesus Christ. To the COVID test, real quick. Well, this will be where I.
That's all I wanted to hear. You've been talking for a half hour about everything else. I don't want to hear about your butt explosions. I just wanted to hear about what it's like to get tested for COVID. Jeez,
butt explosion, freaking scud butt missiles. So
yeah, keep painting a picture. I bet everyone's definitely still listening right now.
Well, I mean that toilet saw a lot of paint, but so the COVID test they did. I kept hearing it was really bad. People were like, oh, it hurts. They like pretty much like poke your brain. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Okay. Well, this is going to suck. And Alexa and I finally get up there. We did our paperwork and then we're doing like a drive through thing. And they did me first. And I was like, so what's this going to feel like? And the nurse says, she probably gets that every single time. And she's like, well, it's going to be weird. You're going to want to sneeze. It's not that bad. I'm like, all right, cool. So she sticks this, like, it looks like a pipe cleaner. It's just like a super dainty, delicate pipe cleaner. And I saw it and I was like,
was there a microchip on it?
Yes, there were like seven.
I knew it. I read on Facebook that that's how they're giving people microchips. So it has to be true.
I mean, there's no other explanation. Of course it's true.
Is that why you feel like a robot now?
Yes, absolutely. I have an off button now. I just go to sleep and I touch a button on my ear and I go to bed. It's kind of cool.
All right, I got to get me one of these COVID tests.
Yeah, pretty dope. But so she takes out this dainty little like pipe cleaner thing. And I'm like, oh, that's all wobbly, like, you know, willy nilly. And I'm like, well, that's not going to be bad at all. She's like, yeah, it's not bad. I'm like, okay. She's like, take a deep breath. And I was like, and she's like, zip! And just stuffs it in there and then like puts it at an angle and then goes zip! And puts it like back. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And then she starts like twisted and like twiggling it around, and I'm like, oh, fucking Christ. And then she takes it out, and there's no way that like you're not crying during this because it just like makes your eyes water like crazy. And she just pulls it out real fast, and then she's like, all right, give me your other nostril. And she does the next thing to the other nose and shoves it up there and just thoop, thoop. And then boop, it's out. And
Ryan, I'm going to isolate this audio and not have it in the context of you explaining.
Yeah, and that was our COVID test, and we got him Wednesday.
That does sound like absolutely miserable in all seriousness.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, it wasn't half as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it is still hands down probably it's the weirdest sensation I've experienced to date.
Okay, I bet. Ew.
So, but we're COVID free, we're healthy. I can now eat solid foods, and life is good.
Still rubbing Vaseline on the cheeks?
No, I think they're moisturized up by now. Good. Might still be a little rashy, but they're okay.
I'm glad to hear.
All yeah,
right. We should
real quick.
Oh,
you go to bed.
Oh, you got. I didn't want to talk about your beer.
Just the beer. It's all new. Right, right. It is a New England style. I'm going to say the word "new" a lot here. It is a new beer from New Holland. It is their New England style IPA called Hazy River. I had it at their tap room in Grand Rapids about 2 weeks ago. We were safely eating outside there before anyone freaks out. And it was delicious, and now I'm having it in a can, and I will say it is good, but not as good as it was on tap, but it rings in at 5.9%, and it's like, I think it's somewhere between like $8 and $9 a six-pack, which is badass, and I think this is going to be my go-to beer for the foreseeable future.
All right.
That's all I got to say about it. I'm not ready to give it a full, like, something out of 10 rating. I can't commit yet, so...
And I had a little sippy of that earlier today, didn't I?
I don't think you did. Did you?
Oh, was that not the one we had on the pontoon?
Did you drink out of my can? No, I gave you that was the Arvon.
Oh, never mind.
Which is also, we could review that totally different really episode because yeah, that thing's freaking badass.
It was like Arvon, pina colada sour. Okay.
Yeah. Arvon Catching Rays. It's titties. Go get yourself some. It's awesome.
Shout out Arvon. Let's go to bed. I'm losing my mind.
Yep. Time to go to bed. All right. Thank you guys for listening.
Yeah. I think we came back strong. Like, I'm proud of us. Like, we had, you know, a couple, or we had
I can't think.
Whatever. We hit a speed bump. People that was, know what I mean. It was like a speed hill. It was bigger than a bump. I spent a weekend
cleaning out my entire house to prepare for the new baby. You were up north for a week.
And then I had to clean out my colon for a week.
And then you were sick. So just all of that said and done, we're back and we're better than ever. So buckle up. Tell your friends about Local Roots. Go ahead. Follow our friend Josh.
Also, don't even...
Yeah, go ahead.
Also, oh no, sorry. Yeah, Josh McCready, thank you so much for coming. I cannot wait to be part of your family. Very excited.
Suck up.
Oh yeah. Also, we picked up another sponsor, Carbo Rocket, baby. We will post a link to our discount code in our episode description. If you haven't had Carbo Rocket stuff, check it out. To date, it's probably my favorite things I've had. Like, usually, like, I don't know, Roctane's my go-to, but it still kind of tastes like something's a little radioactive in there. Maybe that's why I like it. Maybe that's why I think it makes me go fast when it really doesn't. But Carbo Rocket tastes natural. It doesn't upset my stomach, and it definitely...
Do you have a flavor recommendation that people should try?
Yes, the 333 Half Evil Lemonade. It's out of stock right now, but it will be back in stock on August 18th.
Cool. I know Tyler's a big fan. Is that his flavor too?
He likes the black cherry that is caffeine free, and he swears by that stuff. I like the caffeine. Evan uses the lemonade as well. I have not tried their pre-workouts, but it sounds pretty intense because it says it makes your face tingle for like 10 minutes. So I'm all about that.
Okay, that sounds badass.
Turns you into the Hulk for like an hour.
Brian, oh my God, this happens every time we get to about an hour and your mic goes fuzzy. It's so weird.
I turn into robot mode.
Good night. So Brian, I know that happened at like a pretty young age, but yeah, go ahead and share your story of when you actually did lose your virginity. Floor is yours.
I was like, so what's this going to feel like? I guess that every single time. And she's like, well, it's going to be weird. You're going to want to sneeze. It's not that bad. I'm like, all right, cool. But so she takes out this dainty little like pipe cleaner thing. Pipe cleaner. And I'm like, oh, that's all wobbly, like, you know, willy nilly. And I'm like, well, that's not going to be bad at all. She's like, yeah, it's not bad. I'm like, okay. She's like, take a deep breath. And I was like, and then she's like, and just stuffs it in there and then like puts it at an angle and then goes thup, and puts it like back. And I'm like, oh yeah. And then she starts like twisting it and like twiggling it around. And I'm like, oh, fucking Christ. And then she takes it out and there's no way that like you're not crying during this because it just like makes your eyes water like crazy.
Oh, you're an emotional lover.
And she just pulls it out real fast. And then she's like, all right, give me your other nostril.
Your nose?
She does the next thing to the other nose.
What?
And shoves it up there and just thoop, thoop, and then boop, it's out.
Wow, that's a hell of a way to become a man. Jeez.